Oh, Lex, I've missed you.
I've missed you too. Wait, Bab?
Oh, no, not with the slang again, not with this.
Well, it's you're the only Brummie that I know, so I'm learning from you, and community's all about learning.
Okay, I'll let you have it, but I'm just going to warn you now, throughout this radio show, you're going to get a lot of Babs, because during this lockdown, I'm actually all the way in Wolverhampton.
Hey, get your Babs out.
For the lasses, eh?
How are you finding lockdown?
Do you know what? I'm actually really comfortable. I think the first couple of weeks were a little bit... I had a little bit of cabin fever. But, you know, being with my lovely girlfriend, being with the family, having the launch of Alphabet and all these, like, new ways to communicate and new ways to get our message out there, I've just been really, you know, trying to look at it as a challenge rather than, you know, something that... to be like worried about. How about you though? Because I've seen your Instagram, I've seen you like looking gorgeous with your self-care routines and stuff. So how's it all going for you?
Mixed. I would definitely say mixed. I feel like being an only child and being on the introvert side of the spectrum, actually my life has put me in quite a good shape for surviving lockdown.
You've been preparing your whole life.
I have.
This.
Turns out that quite a lot of my life is actually just lockdown. but yesterday I hit a wall. I was just like, oh my God, I have no motivation to do anything. And I kind of, rather than beat myself up about it, I kind of allowed myself to sit in those feelings for a bit and kind of be like, okay, take the day. Sure, just... don't really feel like you have to do anything today. And actually, tomorrow, call it a new day. And you then get on with kind of quote unquote regular life and regular feelings.
I'm so glad you did that. It's so important because we actually spoke yesterday. And I remember when you were taking the day, you were sat on the sofa with your head upside down, just letting your inner child run free. And I love that. And it's so important because we forget to do those things. We forget that sometimes we do just need a rest and to what we call it here a roly-poly or a gamble.
Oh, right.
I don't know what you call it.
Why do you call it a roly-poly or a
A gamble, you know, when you because you like upside down and then you roll over. Do you roly-poly or a gamble, bub?
Oh, there we go. Who knew?
Half of the listeners are literally right with me. The other half are literally looking exactly like you, just puzzled.
Yeah, those of us from the south are there going, right, I don't know what's going on. A roly-poly's a dessert.
Oh, no, literally, producer Seb is in the background like, what? What are they talking about? What language is she speaking?
Well, you mentioned producer Seb in the background, and I probably should clarify for our listeners that we are all sat remotely obeying social distancing and lockdown. And that's one of the reasons why community has done this like pivot and
ooh,
is coming.
Pivot sachet. Away.
Yeah, and it's why we've done this little pivot and we're now coming in your ears from
oh, coming in your ears. This is getting better and better.
Well, it's we've had to change because as a few people who like follow us on the socials will know, we'd started to record season two and we'd got some amazing interviews lined up and we'd done the live shows as well. And then COVID-19 and lockdown hit. And you can't be sat in a recording studio. That there's no way of obeying social distancing in that.
It's and just global pause.
Yeah, exactly. So lovely Sebastina, our radio producer, they also launched Alphabet Radio Station. And so we thought, well, you know what? We're just going to do this little pivot and we'll jump on with a live show.
And I love it. I love that we're here because I'm seeing lots and 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 lots.
You're seeing lots?
And lots and lots of stuff on the internet and on the news about the things that we can't do. And community's always been about the things we can do because as a community, we've always faced restrictions and we've always been relentless and tireless in finding ways around overcoming adversity. And so I just love that community's been able to, I'll use your word, pivot over and still actually do the things that we can do because we can still be kind and we can still look out for each other and we can still connect. So I'm just glad that we're getting to do that and that we have this amazing platform that the amazing producer Seb has put together with Alphabet Radio. And we're both on it, yay.
Hey. Yeah, because you've also got another show on here which you are hosting with your girlfriend, aren't you?
Yes, it's called The Agony Wives. It's very, very tongue-in-cheek. We just wanted to do something together to sort of, well, we'll just be honest, kill some time in lockdown, have some fun, have a bit of banter. You know, it's just been really nice to connect with people because we are the people that, you know, you always have that couple that your friends come to with their problems. Mm-hmm. So we've always joked about being like agony aunts and agony wives. So we thought, you know, why not just share it with the community as a bit of fun? So hopefully you've listened to it. I don't know if it's got your taste in music. It's got some absolute bangers on there. Travis Scott, do you know who that is?
I do not know.
I didn't think so. But tell me about your show, because I know that, you know, you've got your own thing going on over there.
Yeah, well, Seb again, like, kind of came and was like, oh, I've got this nighttime slot to fill and I don't really know what to do. And for the last, the last year, I've been an ambassador for the mental health charity Shout, which operate a crisis support text line, a bit like the Samaritans, but over text. All people need to do is text Shout or Blue or Start or something like that to 85258. That's 85258.
Love that.
And someone like me, who is a trained crisis counsellor, will be on the line to text chat with you and help move you from a hot moment where you're perhaps feeling a bit overwhelmed or a bit scared or a bit anxious to a cool moment where you can start to process things a bit better and start to feel more empowered to take on what else these challenges might have been. Anyway, and from about 10 p.m. each night, we have a huge surge in the number of texters and people who reach out to us needing help, because I think there's a reason why that kind of like midnight bit is known as the lonely hour.
Yeah, it's like the witching hour. And I call it the imagination dragon, because that's the time for me when my imagination runs wild and the dragon comes and all of these things that probably aren't real or aren't ever going to happen, they just become real in your mind and it can really take over. So I can really, you know, I can personally relate to that because I know exactly what it's like to be sat at home at night with just alone with your thoughts.
100%. It's that point where you can keep yourself busy during the day, you can distract yourself, and then in the evening you can chat with your friends, but then suddenly everyone else has gone to bed and you're just alone.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when Seb was like, oh, I need to fill something in this nighttime slot, I kind of was like, oh, what about if we just had a really nice, calm, comforting time? I was like, you know, like a bit of a audio cuddle club. And so yeah, I was like, well, there you go, Seb, that's your idea, that's what you should do. And Seb bounced it back to me and was like, no, that was your idea, that's what you've just agreed to do to me for me, thanks. I was like, oh okay. So I chatted with Shout, and yeah, cuddle club is now going to be on Alphabet Radio, and it's going to be just there for an hour, some really nice relaxed music, but also some good wind down exercises for the end of the day, some really good breathing skills and things like that you can do, as well as some really proactive advice from fantastic therapists at Shout.
Well, maybe I can call you a little meditation or something that you can play for five, or some breathing.
That would sound lovely.
Do a little collab.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what the most exciting thing I'm looking forward to about being on the radio.
What's that?
Playing some tunes.
Yes!
We get to play songs, finally.
And it's going to be a bit all over the place, though, because we do not have the same taste in music.
I'm super eclectic, though, and I know you are too, so I think there's going to be some wild ones and hopefully a little bit of middle ground. We can find the middle ground somewhere. We both love a bit of Diana Ross, surely.
This is very true.
This is true.
Yeah. So the first song that I would like to pick for Community the Radio Show is...
I feel like, hang on. Before you announce the song, I feel like we need a drum roll, because it's the first song that we're ever going to play on Community Radio. I think we should get producer Seb right now to see if we can get a drum roll before you announce it.
Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop.
Ah, yeah!
Yes.
I love that one. I actually do love that one.
If you wake up and you don't want to smile, if it takes just a little while, because it's such an uplifting positive song. So this is Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop.
I'm literally swaying, one arm in the air, enjoying it, like exactly as you recommended, Lex. The positivity was just radiating through. So much so, I just banged the table. I'm sorry I didn't like send a ricochet through the microphone.
It's quite all right. I mean, I was there with you with my hands in the air, like dancing around to that, and realised, was like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't have given up on deodorant during lockdown.
Well, luckily, I'm not going to lie, I did see the sweat patches. However, I can't smell anything, so.
Well, that's good. And our listeners can't even see it.
Oh, yeah. I've just outed you. I'm sorry. It's natural. No shame here. That's like
real
mental.
I'm going red.
You're always going to be beautiful for me. And what I loved about that song, I must say, is we actually agreed. Which is unusual for us with our little taste, which is right on topic for me to introduce our fun little segment that we've designed for our radio show called Swap It Like It's Hot.
Swap It Like It's Hot.
I love that. Do you actually know that song?
Oh my God, yes. I was alive in the 90s. Was that out in the 90s? It was, wasn't it?
I think it was like maybe like the noughties, but we'll get producer Deb to check that and we'll see who was right. So...
I was alive during it.
You were alive, but we're just not quite sure when it was. But I'm going to tell them about Swap It Like It's Hot. So Swap It Like It's Hot, the idea, it was a brilliant idea from Lex. Because we have such different backgrounds and interests and views, we thought it would be nice for us to share a piece of LGBTQ plus media, like a book, a film, a TV show, an album, and just sort of explore, enjoy while we're in lockdown, and then give each other a little bit of a, what do they call it? I don't want to say a critique, but
a mini review, a rating.
See, I'm such a Virgo. I'm like, it's a critique. How many holes can I pick in this?
It is. Well, I think one of the lovely things about this as well is that because the show is coming out every 2 weeks, it gives our listeners time as well to join in with us. And so as you recommend something to me and I recommend something to you as well, I want you being you listeners now who have invited Shara and I into your homes via the audio magic of, well, the medium of magic audio.
I love that.
Yeah. You can join in this as well. And you can also give your opinions by reaching out to us on the socials. We are at Community Pod on all of the socials. Or you can email us at communitypod@gmail.com and let us know what you think of our recommendations as well. Maybe you'll even recommend something yourself.
I love that because I definitely need more recommendations. Every time I speak to somebody who's part of the queer alphabet, they all have their own individual stories. They all have their own individual artists that are just so undiscovered because of, well, we know what it's like with the queer people being presented in the media. We struggle. So I think it's even more important for us to share those stories and share them with each other. And I'm so excited for you to have to look at some of the stuff that I'm going to send to you, because some of it, it may not be stuff that I love now, but I feel like it's really important and I really want to just find your take on it.
Okay, so hit me. What are you swapping like it's hot to me this week?
Okay, so my first Swap It Like It's Hot is, for me, the first piece of media that I consumed that made me question and explore my sexuality.
Oh, okay.
And I think anybody who was sort of born in the 80s, 90s will have definitely heard of it. Okay. And if you are a lesbian...
Is it the L word?
It's not the L word.
Oh, okay.
It is. It's very British.
Oh my God! Sugar Rush!
Sugar.
Oh!
So I actually, because of the mixed race and the curly hair, I was nicknamed Sugar for years, to the point now sometimes, even if I go to the scene in Birmingham, mm-hmm. I'll hear people say Sugar and I will literally cringe. So if that's
you... Do you reply, ah, honey?
No, I'd say, please stop calling me that, because she wasn't even a lesbian and she... I say nothing. So it's Sugar Rush, but I'm saying nothing about it. Don't get me excited because I'll just tell you everything.
Well, give a synopsis to listeners who might not have watched or heard of Sugar Rush, because I can remember watching it. It was on Channel 4, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on Channel 4. So yeah. It's about a lesbian, we'll call her questioning schoolgirl.
Yeah.
Who's 15, 16, so going through puberty, just maturing. And she's sort of exploring a crush on her friend who's called Sugar. And I'm just going to leave it there. So it's about how that story unfolds, her crush, how it develops, and the sort of antics that they go up to as teenage girls.
Fantastic. And that's available on 4OD, I assume,
yes,
as well?
Yes, you can get it on All 4, I think it's called. So you can literally just watch it online. There's two seasons of it. And what you'll love about it is it's set in Brighton.
Ah, fantastic. Okay, right. That is my challenge. I will watch season one of Sugar Rush this week. That I'm really looking forward to that now. That I can remember watching that as a teenager. And obviously I didn't connect it to the story in quite the same way because I wasn't lesbian. But I still remember it kind of being like there's an LGBT thing. Oh.
Literally, and that was my thing. It was the thing that people watched maybe with the volume turned down a little bit in their bedrooms, or they talked about it in a whisper at school.
Yeah, I can understand that. Okay.
So Lex, I really want you to, as much as I'm excited to hear what you're going to recommend, I'm also a little bit reluctant, but
okay.
Hit me with it.
So I am recommending a film to you. It's only like an hour and a half long. So it's easier than Sugar Rush. It is called Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Have you ever heard of it?
No. Is it Hedwig like the owl from Harry Potter?
Yes, it is. Okay. This isn't what happens when, you know, this isn't a prequel to Hedwig's life before they were
nothing
an owl.
Nothing to do with owls.
Nothing to do with the Harry Potter franchise. Please don't sue us, J.K. Rowling.
Sorry, J.K.
Just J.K., Miss Thing.
Sorry, JK, but...
So Hedwig and the Angry Inch is a film that came out in 2001. It is a musical. It's a comedy. It is a drag film about a German living in communist East Berlin who finds this love of Lou Reed, David Bowie, Iggy Pop, and somehow escapes East Berlin to become this gender-bending queer rock star in America. It's got phenomenal music. It has got hilarious lines in. And it's got so much love and heart to it because there's a fantastic story in it about love and about finding yourself. And one of the lines that really sticks with me about
no,
it...
No, you can't tell me.
No, I think I can because I think it will I think it will whet your appetite a bit.
Oh. Okay,
yes.
You said wet. I'm here.
I think that one of the things that I really identify with it is the brilliant line of, to be free, one must give up a little part of oneself.
Okay.
And I think it's quite interesting when you look at it in a queer perspective context of, what does that mean for us? Anyway, so that is Hedwig and the Angry Inch by John Cameron Mitchell.
I literally just did that whole teenager thing where I tutted and shook my head because now I want to hear more about it. Now, why have you stopped? You literally left me on a cliffhanger of...
See? Okay. And dear listeners, remember, you can get involved and you can watch these in the comfort of your own homes over the next 2 weeks and join us back here for the first results of our Swap It Like It's Hot to see how these things hold up to 10, 15, 20 years on later viewing.
I'm excited.
And
I'm so excited.
Shah, I think that then it is time, seeing as we are on the radio again, for a bit of a jam and a bit of a wiggle and a dance. Over to you for the next song selection.
Oh, yeah. So it's my first selection for community. So I thought long and hard about this. And
oh, who doesn't love it long and hard? Sorry, I haven't been touched by a man in 5 weeks during lockdown.
You just almost ruined the whole intro of the song because I just gagged. And now I've got to...
Well, you can count on me to ruin things, but not so much on the gagging.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
I apologise on behalf of Lexington to all listeners in all of the world. Okay, so I'm going to get on with the song. So I've chosen this song because Not only is it a gay anthem, but I also believe in mantras and manifesting. So I believe if I keep singing this in my head and out loud, not only will probably my girlfriend leave me, but I might be able to get out of the house. So it is Diana Ross, I'm Coming Out.
Yes.
I'm coming out. I want the world to know. Have to stop singing, but absolutely love that song, Lex. You love it.
It was good. Not only was it now a gay rights anthem, it is also a praying for lockdown to end as soon as is safely appropriate.
Amen to that. But I want to share with the listeners something that I'm really proud of. So as we mentioned at the top of the show, we spent the beginning of the year curating and putting together Community Podcast Season 2, which meant interviewing loads of amazing activists. The activist or the interview that really hit home with me and has really stayed with me is, I think, the first one that we're going to be sharing. So, Lex, do you want to tell everyone about that?
Yeah, this is a interview with a brilliant campaigner, documentary maker, trailblazer, and just all-round mensch who sat down to talk with us really incredibly candidly and openly about being intersex and what it means. And they were incredibly patient and very good and kind with the fact that you and I really needed a lot of educating about this. So this is our interview about Intersex 101 with Anik.
The following interview starts off lighthearted in tone, but moves on to discuss some topics which may be distressing, such as suicide and forced medical procedures. Please listen with care.
Hi, my name's Anik and I'm an intersex activist.
So this is going to be a very basic bitch chat, I'm afraid, because I am going to put my hands up here and be like, I only know the very, well, I was going to say, the basics of this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lead from the front and be honest and authentic when, like, yeah, I really don't know as much as I should mm-hmm. on this issue, because intersex people, as I already learned, there is no such thing as intersexuality. they make up the I in the yeah. LGBTQIA plus society, and we don't really hear from them, see them, or know enough to hear about them. So, Anik,
yeah, well,
Where do we even begin?
A lot of people thought the I was for invisible in the first place. So
hey.
I was like, when I first came out and someone told me the I was for invisible, I was like, it's for intersex people as well. Maybe it's also for invisible people, but you can't see them because they're invisible. But
that's what I thought you were going to say, because intersex people are invisible.
Yeah.
So really, really basic. Mm-hmm. Start at the very beginning, because it's a very good place to start.
Yeah.
What is it?
So intersex is an umbrella term, and it's used to define people who are born with sex characteristics that don't fit what we usually see as male or female. So it's really something that's to do with your sex characteristics. So your hormone levels, your hormones in general, your way, the way your body looks externally and internally. And it could be to do with your chromosomes as well. There's lots of ways a person can be intersex. So there's not just one version of it. So I think that's probably where the confusion starts.
Yeah,
it's a heavily medicalized area.
Yeah, people generally, you know, think it's either you've got one bit or you've got another bit. And mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed to say that that's pretty much what I thought.
Yeah, and I think because also we are really, really training ourselves and hopefully we're getting much better at it to not reduce trans people mm-hmm. to their genitals.
Absolutely.
It feels really icky and wrong to then be like, oh, but are intersex people, then they then have two, is that and are we okay to talk about that?
And yeah. we put our shoulders up and yeah. scrunch our faces up and our voices go like this because yeah. we don't know.
I mean, it's really confusing for a lot of people, because even I can only talk about my own experience mm-hmm. as being an intersex person from the kind of variation that I have. But I have so many other friends who are also intersex who have completely different bodies. And intersex isn't just something that you can quickly figure out. It's like a whole journey you need to go on, and you need to unlearn a lot of the things you kind of got taught in school about chromosomes being XY means male automatically and X X means female. That's not actually what science is like.
Wow.
So trying to relate it to the trans mm-hmm. issue, and I know they're separate, I'm not putting them as the same thing.
Yeah.
I would never ask a trans person about their genitals.
Yeah.
Is it as rude to ask an intersex person, so what kind of intersex are you?
Absolutely. It's not something that you really need to know, as long as they say they're intersex. And even within the intersex community, some people shy away from actually asking that question because it reinforces this whole idea of medicalization, because we're asking people for a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the fact that intersex and trans are different, some trans people are intersex. So it can be very confusing, especially if you've never heard of it. And whilst for someone like me, I knew from a very young age that I was different, some people don't find out they're intersex until they hit puberty or until they're much later on in life and they suddenly find out something about themselves they didn't know. I know people who have found out in their 50s that they were intersex. Wow. So it's not just something that you know straight away. And there are so many different terms to be used. So I didn't really think the word intersex applied to me until I was probably about 21 and a doctor said, so how long have you known you're intersex? And I was like, I'm what now? Because until then, I'd only known medical names for all of the different things my body showed. So I didn't really know that word intersex. And it wasn't until then I did a lot more learning about what it actually means. The second I was born about 2 months early, and they couldn't tell if I was male or female at first. So they did a karyotype test to find out what my chromosomes were. My chromosomes were XY, and usually we see XY chromosomes as being male. So they thought, okay, maybe it's just because this child was born early, so then we'll class that as male.
Okay. And then was it just like your family then decided that you're a boy?
Well, it kind of, and there was lots of surgeries. My first surgery was when I was 4 months old, and that was just to make me look more male, because it was evident from when I was born that actually they didn't know how my body was going to look growing up. And until the age of 10, when they put me on hormones, it kind of just didn't develop much down there.
Wait, so... Sorry, I'm... It's...
Mind blown.
Yes, mind blown, but also kind of shocked that because we live in an age of people having body autonomy, mm-hmm. but I'm genuinely shocked that parents are then at such a young age having to make huge decisions about how their child will represent and mm-hmm. navigate the world without that person, without that child being consulted on the process.
Mm. So you see, that's why I'm such a big advocate for intersex people to have their own bodily autonomy and for children to be able to make decisions for themselves when they reach the age they can do. Now, that changes per person. So someone might be more mature at 10, someone might be more mature at 13. But I don't believe anybody, except for the person who's involved, whose body it is, should be making irreversible decisions on that child's body. So with my own parents, they agreed to a lot of things because doctors told them I needed it. And they didn't really know much about intersex, so they didn't say anything. They just said, okay, for doctors saying my child needs surgery, my child needs surgery. And that's a story we see everywhere. Describing as a choice for my parents is probably even a bit too complex because they were kind of just given the information that in order for me to have a happier life, I would need to have surgery. And that's the bare minimum information they were given. And they were told by the age of 2, when I needed to have my next surgeries, that it was also that I could pee standing up. So when I was born, I couldn't pee standing up. You know, like all girls can't pee standing up. Yeah. Probably something like that. So there was, instead of a hole being at the top or tip of my penis, there was a slit alongside the whole of the penis. So in the scrotum, there was this slit. So they decided what they would do was close that slit up and use skin from elsewhere to basically make it so I could pee standing up. And they told my parents this would also allow me to have a healthy functioning relationship and have kids when I'm older. And all of these other social reasons, but they didn't actually explain to my parents that actually this isn't something you need to do to save your child's life or anything like that. It isn't something that needs to happen right now. And what ended up happening was, before I turned 5, I had multiple surgeries in that area just to fix what kept going wrong. Because obviously, as your body grows, they would need to make amendments.
So it was more sort of cosmetic, would you say?
Yeah, it was cosmetic. But I didn't even realise it was cosmetic until fairly recently, in the past few years. I always saw it as something that I definitely needed. Mm. And looking at the statistics, so what I'm describing now is called hyperspadias, and it happens in 1 in 300 boys in the UK. So it only affects people who have XY chromosomes, and it happens in 1 in 300, which is...
That's quite a lot. That's low.
Shara and I just looked at each other because...
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Did I mishear?
Yeah.
So the severity of it is where it becomes more debatable whether it counts as intersex or not. So to give you a bit of context, in around 2006, some doctors decided they didn't like the word intersex because it was being used too liberally and people were saying things were intersex when they weren't. So they changed it to something called DSD. Which was going to be either differences or disorder of sex development.
Ooh, disorders.
Mm-hmm. No. So the intersex community at the time, who had by that point already been starting to do activism, so I'll talk about the history a bit later on, but the people who had started to speak out against these surgeries were not happy with this whole new label of DSD. But that was in 2006, and that was probably around the time when I was old enough to actually understand stuff. I was born in 95. So when it came to me actually learning about myself, I learned it through this whole idea that I had a disorder, that there was something different about my body, but it was completely natural, but you just don't talk about it because it's to do with your private parts. So some people would say to me, well, you're not really intersex enough because you have a DSD. It's not like an intersex thing where you have like both male and female genitalia. But actually, that doesn't even happen. We often think that that's what intersex means.
That's what I thought.
That's in my ignorance, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought you had both.
I couldn't quite picture it, but I thought you had both a vagina and a penis.
So you see, sometimes even in humans, it can look like that, but that's not actually possible. Even with people who have XY and XX chromosomes, which also is a thing, it doesn't always present like that. You won't have a vagina and a penis. That's not how it works.
Wow.
So... as you can tell, the word intersex itself can be quite confusing for people.
Yeah. So even if you just break down like into what it means, like you'd assume that that would mean what it...
But essentially, all it means is that it doesn't fit the binary. It doesn't fit what we are taught is just male and just female. So I have friends who have XY chromosomes and they lived a perfectly normal life until they got into puberty and then found out actually that's when they found out they had XY chromosomes. Their bodies looked completely female until that point. And then during puberty, they find out that actually they've got XY chromosomes. The reason they're not menstruating, not having the typical experience of what a female should have or does have, is because they have XY chromosomes. And sometimes that information is kept from the person themselves.
Wow.
Sometimes I laugh to myself thinking, I wonder if someone's growing up really transphobic right now. And then they find out they have XY chromosomes. Like, I wonder what that's going to be like. It's going to be like a minefield.
So someone could grow up and be socialized as a woman and then get to puberty and suddenly go through a male puberty.
Sometimes, but sometimes it's just that the body just doesn't respond to androgens in the same way. Right. So no matter how much testosterone you inject into them or anything like that, the body naturally just doesn't know what to do with it. So it doesn't make a difference. So I think what might be helpful is if I talk a bit about the history of intersex.
Please do.
To say how we got into the surgery.
You are the sensei and we are the student.
Yep.
So intersex has always existed. Old terms for it, which we don't use anymore, begin with H. Can you guess it?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't say it, but you can guess it.
Right. So sorry, I'm there.
Yep, goes back to the whole idea of being both male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people within the intersex community try to reclaim that, but generally it's like the N-word. If you're not part of the community, you shouldn't use it.
I didn't know that word was offensive.
No, neither did I.
Yeah, well, you get some people who are comfortable with it, but on the whole, it's not something you should use. With intersex, generally I say mirror the language the person's using.
Thank you.
That's generally the best way to go about it. Because it's such a complex area where some people will only view it from a medical perspective. They will say, I have this condition.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other people will say, I have this variation. Because it's a natural way of being. They don't want to see it as a medical problem. Because actually, they are healthy as they are.
Well, that's one of the things that sort of I'd struggle with, because if it is so medical and it's also part of the LGBTQIA+, how do we get this is a medical condition that someone has, but also it affects their sexuality? Because it does,
well, think,
does it
think about it in the terms that not all intersex people identify as part of the LGBTI community. So that's probably the first point. And when it comes down to it, when you're intersex, it's not something you always know the history about. And for me, doing a lot more research into it, I found out that a lot of it was rooted in LGBT history. So all of the activists identified, not all of them, but most of them identified as queer. And queer spaces were the ones who said, let's help intersex people. Even now, the UN estimates that it's 1.7% of the population that are intersex at the higher end of the spectrum.
That's more than trans people.
1.7%. But even that's inaccurate, because if you think about it, who's actually out there recording when someone's intersex? There's no one actually recording that. So they're like, being intersex doesn't mean you're automatically non-binary. So when we hear words like non-binary, it really depends on your definitions. All of this becomes this complex language game. And it's important to really separate sex and gender at this point. So just because you're intersex and your sex might be non-binary because you're intersex doesn't mean your gender is non-binary. So you can, like me, be intersex, but still be male, still be a boy.
Yeah.
And all of this thing can be so confusing. So in the late 60s, what ended up happening was there was twins born, and they were two twin boys, and everything was fine. They were going through a routine circumcision, and one of the boys' penis got botched off by mistake. So during that, in the late 60s, what ended up happening was a doctor said, gender is a social construct. So what we will do is raise this child as a female, assign them female, change the name and also the genitalia to make it look more female, and you will refer to Bruce as Brenda now. So the family moved away, and Dr. John Money, who was the founder of this kind of theory, the one who said, yes, gender is a social construct, it can be changed, started talking to medical journals and other high-profile people saying, my experiment has worked. So when you have a case where there is an intersex child or something goes wrong, all you need to do is perform surgery and raise the child in whichever sex you desire, and everything will be fixed. It will all be no problem. And there's one of the first founding intersex activists, Cheryl Chase. One of her doctors said to her, it's easier to dig a hole than build a pole. And that's why most female, most intersex people were assigned female at birth, because it was just easier for the medical community. So from the 70s to the late 90s, a lot of these surgeries were happening, and they used to be called normalizing surgeries.
Even that name.
Normalizing surgeries. Now the language has moved on a bit. They call them masculinizing and feminizing surgeries. And that's a way to move away from normalizing. But essentially, they still use the same terms like ambiguous genitalia or atypical. So even when I was five, those were the words I'd known to describe my genitalia. I didn't really know anything else. I didn't know what was different about me, except for the fact it seemed really interesting to everyone else.
Wow.
And then what happened with Brenda is when Brenda grew up, they found out that the truth was they were Bruce when they were born. And eventually they ended up taking their own lives and living as a male called David before they ended up taking their lives. And John Money hid all that from the people. He was still saying his theory worked, everything's good. So by that stage, before other doctors intervened and finally reported on the truth, thousands of intersex babies around the world using this model from America ended up having these surgeries. So, and they are still happening today. There is no country except for Malta and a few other places who have legislation in place to actually stop these surgeries. The NHS in the UK says they don't perform them, but actually they do perform masculinizing and feminizing surgeries. So they don't perform surgeries on intersex because intersex doesn't exist. It's DSD in the NHS. So there's no clear data. So we don't know how many of these surgeries are actually happening and how many people are affected by it. So even when you say 1.7%, that's Some people say that's the complete maximum it could be, but I don't know. I just think there's no accurate statistics on this area and you can't make any assumptions.
So can I just make sure that I'm following this 100%? Because it just sounds so barbarically cruel. Back in the 1970s, there were two twin boys, neither of which were intersex, non-binary, or trans.
Yep.
And as we know, they are separate. Mm-hmm. They were going in for a routine circumcision. One of those surgeries went wrong, and the doctor decided to inform the family to continue with the surgery and raise that boy as a girl. Then later on in life, that person who was born cisgendered, they weren't trans, who was kind of medically forcibly transitioned at a young age, found out that this was done to them, tried to revert to their original identity, then committed suicide, which was then covered by the founder of this surgery who was promoting it. Meanwhile, this is then happening internationally to thousands of people who are young people, children, babies, who were intersex or did have DSD over the course of 4 decades.
And it's still happening.
And then we now get to a point where you were saying the NHS is conducting this on children today.
And they have no idea how many of these surgeries are being performed. So when you take hyperspadias, for example, some doctors will literally argue with me over whether it counts as intersex or not. And they will bring out diagrams and show me pictures that are actually potentially one of them could be of me. They took pictures of thousands and of intersex kids to document it.
It's actually terrifying.
This isn't something we get taught or anything like that. But the reason these surgeries happen is because of systemic problems in the way we look at these things. It's all being done by surgeons. So I'm not saying surgeons are all bad. I'm not saying doctors are all bad, because it goes against the whole principle of do no harm, which a doctor essentially wants for everyone. But what ends up happening with an intersex person is they weigh the social benefits up and say it's more important that the body is changed to fit in compared to just letting that child have a healthy, normal life. Mm-hmm. I've never, ever had any psychological treatment to be focused particularly on this whole intersex stuff.
Neither has my parents. Is there, you know, if we're, you know, the NHS are doing these masculization and feminization surgeries and they're changing the way that people present externally, how are we helping them with what's happening in their mind? How are we internally supporting intersex people through this, you know, transition almost, if you like?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've got a friend called Martin who is absolutely incredible. He's an activist as well. And one thing he argues is that actually, if you're intersex, when they change your body, you're transitioning from intersex to male or female. So that's his argument. So a lot of the time, coming on from Dr. Money's original kind of programming from the 70s was, if you tell the patient what's happening, they won't be able to understand. The parents won't be able to bond with their child. So you need to keep it secret as possible. What? So sometimes I've had stories from people whose parents don't even know. And I remember at one point, so I made a documentary about this, me finding out about all of this kind of intersex stuff.
Brilliant.
It's called The Intersex Diaries. When I was going through this whole idea of filming a documentary, I ended up having conversations with my parents that I didn't have before, because it was so normal for me to have this body. It wasn't really something we spoke about at home. So it was something we knew that we don't talk to other people about. But because I'm the youngest child, my brother and sister always knew. And at one point filming, my mum turned around and said, I couldn't pronounce hyperspadias when you were first born. And by the age of like 2, when they were doing the surgeries, I asked the nurse what hyperpadia meant. And the nurse just laughed at her and said, it's okay, you don't need to worry, and walked off. And I didn't know that. And I always wondered why my mum took me to the doctors all the time, because I used to go every 6 months to have my genitals measured and checked. And then if I was in the pediatric ward, I'd be checked by teams of doctors. And I didn't really understand why, because I didn't feel sick, but I knew there was something different. And obviously, as I grew up and started learning about how bodies normally look, I began to realize how different I was. And all of these things were just stuff we didn't talk about as a family, or that my doctors didn't say, okay, well, you're going through this stuff. Here's someone you can talk to about it. So, and this isn't just something that's happened to me. It happens to lots of other intersex people. There is just no one you can talk to. And as an adult trying to seek therapy for this, there is also no one I can talk to. So when I went to my GP, my GP is absolutely fantastic. She did some research, because she said, I've only had about one lecture during my whole thing in med school, probably less than an hour on DSDs, as it was known back then. And she said that, actually, I don't know enough about this, so I'm going to go off and do my own research. But if she hadn't done that, she would have just referred me back to my surgeon, because the surgeons are the specialists at this moment. So the way it's supposed to work is, if you have a child and they're born intersex today, there's meant to be like this whole multidisciplinary team, and that's meant to be built up of a social worker, a psychologist, an endocrinologist, a surgeon, and a GP. There's lots of different people involved, just so that the child's best interests are taken into account. Sounds great, right?
Yeah.
But in practice, it's not happening like that. What ends up happening is, around the world with this model, surgeons are still taking a charge on it, and parents who try not to enforce surgeries are being treated as if they're doing something wrong, or as if they are ruining their children's lives because they're going to get bullied in school. And that's not something that's actually ever been proven in medical literature or anything like that. I mean, I wasn't going around showing everyone my genitals.
That's
school.
Exactly what I was just thinking. It's like, how?
I had I've read this incredible book called Raising Rosie, and that's about a couple who have an intersex child who talk about their story of not wanting to force a gender assignment on their child, and it talks you through their process. So it's like part memoir, part guide.
Hmm.
And they were just talking about how the doctors were literally making them feel bad for not forcing stereotypes or genders or doing these things, saying that they're making their child's life a hell. The child is fine. She is completely fine, doesn't have any medical problems. So there are some times when someone might be born intersex and you might need to perform surgery. And that's, for example, if they need to expel urine from their body and it can't. So obviously, if it's life-saving, no one really has a problem with that. But when you start performing surgeries like clitorectomies, so that's making the clitoris a smaller size so that it fits typical what female genitalia should look like, that's unnecessary.
Thing that is really seems really striking to me here is there is a debate in the medical community at the moment about when you have gender non-conforming children who may or may not identify as trans, what age can or should they start hormone blockers? When could they start to transition? And we have legal age limits as to when they can do that medically, and when the NHS can perform surgery and provide hormones. And to get there, trans people have to go through years of psychotherapy and counselling to quote unquote prove that they are ready for it.
Yeah, that does not happen with intersex people.
Yeah, and yet intersex people,
you just dig a hole or build a pole.
They just do it at birth.
Horrendous.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it happened throughout my life. It started at birth. And I think even somewhere deep down, I must have thought there was an end point to this. It was during filming my actual documentary that my doctor, I don't know if he let slip or he just thought I knew anyway. He said, yep, so we won't see you for another 5 to 7 years and then we'll do the next surgery. And I was like, wait, what? I thought this was it. I thought this was done. But it turns out, actually, no, you need multiple surgeries to keep making sure everything is done. And that was the moment in my head. I was like, wait a minute, who am I doing these surgeries for? Who is it for? Is it for me so that I feel comfortable, or is it for society so that they're more comfortable with intersex bodies? And that's why I became an activist, because you need to start familiarizing people with the idea that intersex exists. And it comes in many different forms. And there are so many different experiences, and people just need to start sharing their stories. And it needs to just become something we talk about. Because if you are going to have a child and they are going to say to you, your child will need this surgery, if you have no knowledge of this, who do you even talk to find out, wait, does my child need this? There isn't enough support groups out there. There are a few charities that are slowly starting to form with intersex people at the heart of it, which is great. But around the world, intersex people are just invisible. And I've had people commenting going, oh, this is just a medical problem. You need to stop talking about this. Why are you proud of your body? Or commenting things like, you don't really belong in the LGBT spectrum because that's to do with sexuality. You know, I'm not saying that intersex has anything to do with sexuality. For me, I see it. I see the LGBTQIA spectrum as a spectrum, as a group of people who just don't fit into what we're told is normal. And just how gay people were forced to have lots of different kinds of therapies that were meant to make them less gay or normal. Intersex people are having surgeries to hide the fact that we are intersex. You may well know someone who is intersex. They've just not told you.
Yeah, what you said earlier about the fact that none of these surgeries were life-saving or added anything to your physical health. It's all just about mental health and how you're perceived. So, wow.
I mean, I should have been taught how to love my body instead of being Change taught it. I needed to have surgery to make everyone else fit in.
Thank you for educating us and for being very patient with our lack of knowledge and my ignorance.
Really. And being so open as well.
And thank you, yeah, absolutely, Shah says, for being your candor and being so open with us.
No problem.
I thought that we were having a conversation about, so does it mean you have both sets of genitals? And we ended up actually talking about institutionalized medical child abuse.
Mm.
And that's
really important.
Really shocked me. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me.
So that was Anik sharing their story with us so candidly and really open. I know I don't just speak for myself, I speak for all of the production team here at Community and my lovely co-host Lex when I say we were all really touched and moved when we listened to that interview. It really brought to light so many issues that we hadn't even thought of, and mental health is always something that we should all consider. If you have any issues with your mental health, you can reach out to Shout by texting START to 85258. That's START to 85258.
And of course, again, we thank Anik for his brilliant candour and open honesty with us. If you want to learn more about this, you can catch Anik's show on Alphabet, or you can see his documentary, The Intersex Diaries, produced by BBC Radio 1. You know how the internet works. And
Hour has gone.
Oh my God, we actually did it. We did a radio show.
We did a radio show. Oh, well done, babe.
Yeah, well done to you too.
Oh, I'm proud of us.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us. I hope you enjoyed. Remember, this is going out as a podcast, so we'll be available on all podcast platforms. You can just find us with Community, QMMUNITY. And if you are new to us, hi there. You can go back and listen to season one, and as well as some of our bonus episodes, and find us on all of the socials at Community Pod.
Make sure you come and say hi. Make sure you keep listening to Alphabet Radio. Stay safe, stay kind, and stay queer.
See you, my lovers. Bye.
See you, bab.